hello, and welcome to another episode of Right Now, a podcast on the craft and business of writing, presented to you by Broadleaf Writers Association, based in Atlanta, Georgia. On this episode, we are joined by screenwriter, comic book writer, and the author of Godfall, Van Jensen. Hello, Van. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. We've gotten past all the worst of the snow, and there's almost spring-like weather for a couple days here in the 60s, and I will take it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, obviously, we're going to talk about Godfall. I want to kind of dig into it, get some writing-related topics in there as well. But first and foremost, I read it. I loved it. You got a really awesome blurb sitting on the front of this from Karen Slaughter, and she uses the phrase genre bending, which I agree with entirely. This is a wonderful blend of mystery and sci-fi, and I want to kind of break down the elements of that. But before we get to it, how did you come about this story? I know I read in your acknowledgments where the sci-fi element came from, but I would love for you to talk about it a little bit more and how you came about blending these two.
Yeah. Well, first off, thank you for the compliment about the book. I never set out with genre in mind, right? Like I'm never like, oh, I'm going to write a sci-fi thriller. It tends to just be things that evolve organically. And so with this book, I truly had a dream of a giant alien, like, you know, in the book, it's a 3 mile long alien. So like miles long entity, falling to Earth and then being dead. And in my dream, it landed next to my hometown, which is my actual hometown is Llewellyn, Nebraska, which is a town of, it was 300 people when I was growing up. Now it's probably about 150 people in Western Nebraska. And Western Nebraska is like flat as flat can be. So just this imagery of like essentially a mountain range dropping out of the sky and blocking that flat terrain was so like iconic in my mind, that when I woke up, you know, it was one of those like, oh, okay, this is something.
Right, that's quite an image.
But then it becomes a question of like, well, what is it, right? What direction do I go? And I typically like I'll kick around ideas for a while and I'll sort of see like what different pieces connect. And with this one, it took a while. Like I really explored like a purely sci-fi thing. But I kept coming back to the idea of like, if this thing fell next to a really small town, which in the book it does, it's, you know, a fictionalized sort of version of my hometown. And you get the outside world descending on it, then you get the disconnect between small town people, urban people, change being forced on people by outsiders, like all of that stuff. And that spoke to a more grounded story. And so like there was always a sheriff character. And then I had a writer friend who, you know, I was talking to him about it, and he was like, the sheriff's the main character, dude. And that, then, you know, it was like, okay, well, now it's a thriller. Like if the sheriff is the main character, it's a thriller. And so it really like it evolved very organically. But yeah, I think I tend to do stuff that does weird things with genre, in part because, I mean, every story has been told. So it's almost like you have to explore at the margins to do something original.
Yeah, and I love, I guess the thing that I enjoyed the most about your utilization of the sheriff and the small town and the mystery that is involved there is you have this, I mean, literally you call it Gulliver. I mean, it's this huge, monstrous thing that is, you visually would never be able to not notice. And yet you make it a backdrop to the overall story that's actually taking place, which allows you to really make the town the character too. You've got all of this life and all this history and all of this story to tell from all these characters. I wanted to ask about your use of POVs, because you have multiple POVs in this one. That's always a tricky one, and I get a lot of questions about, like, how do I know when I use multiple POVs, and how do I know which POVs to use? So for Godfall, how did you decide, A, that you wanted to use multiple POVs, and then secondly, how did you decide, other than the sheriff, which other ones to use?
So you're spot on in noticing that, and I wish that I could come out and be like, oh, here was this genius plan that I had from day one, right? But there's always stuff with writing this trial and error, and also like this is my first published novel. I say published because I wrote a really terrible book that helped me to learn how to
Yes,
write.
we all have that file or drawer or box or whatever it is.
For sure. But yeah, so I think I wasn't even fully aware of what I was doing when I first wrote a pass on it, and it's like this book had such a long life of getting to the finish line that it's kind of, I mean, I worked on it for like, I don't know, it was like 5 years, which in the middle of that I had an agent who had the book on his desk for 2 years and never read it. So
Oh, that's fun.
it's a little hard to even like remember the full life of it, but I think I knew I didn't want it to be first person. I knew I didn't want it to be omniscient. But then I was exploring different points of view, and the original draft was, I would say, like 50% different from this version of it, and there were several more perspectives originally. And it was really my current agent, obviously fired the person who did not read the book, but my current agent was like, you know what, you have too many perspectives, it really, like, it loses some immediacy, and so if you winnow down, so it's really just David the sheriff. And then there's a killer on the loose, and so you have the killer's point of view, which is pretty limited. You're really not going into it that often. And then a character, Charlotte, who is someone who grew up in the town, went out into the world, like really kind of hates this small town, became a journalist, but to advance her career is coming back to the town, and is forced to reconcile. So those became the three, and I don't want to give anything away with the book, but it becomes clear later on kind of why those are the three, because they're all connected.
Yeah, Charlotte was one in particular that I was curious about as we go, because we'd get, much like the you're used to the killer, but with Charlotte we'd get these little small snippets of here's where she's at and what's going on around her. And I mean, you feel that it's building towards something, certainly with her connection to the town. I would say I did not expect it to go where it went. So, very, very well done in keeping information from the reader without keeping them out of the loop.
It's a tricky thing, that balance, and you want, I mean, I guess I ultimately go to, like, I think stories should have emotional resonance first and foremost. Like every story I write is going to be a genre story. Like, there's going to be over the top big elements. But I also always want to write things to where if you strip all of that stuff away, that it still works as a character drama. So that's kind of the way that I approach it, is like, am I taking these characters on a meaningful emotional journey that, has changes, that's really seen them make hard choices for good or for bad. That's what I want to focus on. So Charlotte, in a lot of ways, Charlotte was my kind of avatar into the story, because I'm a former journalist. I also, growing up in this small town was really, really hard for me because I was like the one kid who liked books, to be, a bit blunt about it. I was a nerd. Like, I read comic books, I drew, I made little, short films. I didn't, I played sports because you had to play sports. But I wasn't like great at sports. I wasn't a rodeo kid. So I just always felt like I didn't fit there. And at the same time, there's stuff that I really loved about it. I grew up on 70 acres out in the country with a creek running through it. It was like the most incredible place to grow up as a child. So what I wanted to get into was just the emotions of like both loving a place and hating it and having to reconcile that. And every time I go back, like, it is strange where it's like, this is my home and I feel more rooted here than I do anywhere else on earth, but also like, it isn't home anymore.
Yeah. You mentioned procedural, and as I was reading this, I had not read your acknowledgments or anything, because I like to go in completely blind when I'm reading a book and just get all the detail later. But I'm reading this and I'm thinking this reminds me, has so many elements of that procedural on TV, and it would make a really fascinating television series, and bookmark that. We'll come back to it. But what was really driving that, aside from the mystery and the sheriff and everything happening there, for me was your use of detail. You do a wonderful job, and I really want to reinforce that word. You do a wonderful job of building out detail and sensory detail, and really creating a visual that is impossible not to be grounded in, not to feel a part of. And so first of all, kudos. But
Thank you.
my question is that something that comes naturally to you when you're writing the draft, or something that you go back in with your edits and build out? And in that case, what is your process when you're looking at that?
Great question. So kind of to start, I feel like I've read a lot just about brain science, and I think that there are certain people who have more developed prefrontal cortexes, right, which is the visual center, and that's the part of the brain that allows us to like pre-visualize a scenario. So we're like, okay, like if I do that, am I going to get eaten by something, or if I do that, am I going to be safe? So I am extremely visual. Like, I can, I could draw any room that I've ever been in, like a floor plan. It's just one of those things. So when I'm writing, what I am doing is I create a set, and I either like I pick a real place that I've been in before, or if I'm making something up whole cloth, like, but I have to be able to like see it, to know every detail of it. And then I'm putting the characters in there, and then I'm kind of just like letting the scene play and then trying my best to describe as effectively as possible, what I am seeing. In terms of detail, I think one thing that really helped me was just coming up in newspapers. I mean, it helped me in a lot of ways because one, you just like you're writing every day. So by the time I was like 30, I had, I don't know, millions of words in print, right? So I got a lot of bad writing out of my system. But one thing that I learned, because I think a lot of writers think that just detail equals quality, but it doesn't, right? Like we all have read books where it's just like, oh man, like this is almost just turning into like a list of stuff. And it's just like, it's boring. So the question is like, what are the important details? And there's a story that I tell whenever I teach writing about, there was a time, so I was a crime reporter at the newspaper in Little Rock, Arkansas, So I have the police scanner, right? Like that's my job. It's like I go in, I turn on the police scanner, I'm hearing the same stuff that the cops are hearing. I like hear something crazy happen, I go to the scene, report on it. So there was a day that a guy got in a car chase, like the police were chasing him, he drove his car into the side of a house. So I get to the scene and there's just like a car sticking out of a house and like all the neighbors are out and it was early in the morning. And everyone's like dressed for school, dressed for work, but then there's this one family and they're sitting in the bed of a pickup truck on folding chairs and they're all in their pajamas. And so I'm like, all right, like that's the family. Because they had no time to get dressed. Like everyone else had time to get dressed. They did not. So I go and I ask them, like, is that your house? They're like, yes, it is. Like, hey, I'm a reporter. I was like, hey, can you kind of tell me like the floor plan of the house, like where the car was? I was talking mainly to the mom, like, where were you? She says, oh, I was in the kitchen. I said, okay. What are you doing in the kitchen? She says, oh, I was cooking breakfast. I said, okay. I said, can I ask what were you cooking for breakfast? She says, I was baking. I said, great, great, great. What were you baking? And she's like, I was baking muffins. So I was like, okay. Thank you. What kind of muffins? She's like, they're blueberry muffins, okay? I'm like, okay. And then, at that point, I leave them alone. So, the lead of the story the next day is like, I forget the lady's name, but so and so was baking blueberry muffins for her family for breakfast when, boom, her house exploded. So the question becomes like, why did I ask her so many questions to get to the point of blueberry muffins? So, two things. One is when you hear blueberry muffins, you immediately like smell it in your mind, right? Like you're transported to it. So that's great. Like that's great because that takes you into the story. But two is it tells you something about this lady that on a weekday, she bakes muffins for her family. Like that's above and beyond as a mom. So, that transports it to the level of telling detail. So it's kind of like, when I'm writing, it's this balance of like, I want to be descriptive enough that you really get the scene and you really know the world and it feels real. But like, I also only want to give you just enough detail that you get something out of it. And then in terms of revision, like, I'll just say like, most of my revision process is I'll like circle big passages and I write DB a lot. And DB just means do better. So
That's fair, and that helps definitely when you're dealing with word economy. I always say to writers, just you're asking like, why did I ask so many questions? And because you were utilizing one of the tools that I think writers need to do the most, and I say this a lot, is you need to let that inner 5-year-old do their job and ask that why over and over and over and over until there just literally aren't any questions left to ask. And that's how you end up with blueberry muffins and the concept of baking breakfast at night and things people can relate to that draw the reader in. So yes. Neuroscience was another thing. I assume if you're a fan of that you've read the Lisa Crone books, Wired for Story and Story Genius, which are both highly recommended for anybody who has not. It's a wonderful, wonderful description on what the brain expects for story and why stories exist the way they do, the structurally, why they exist the way they do. So that's fair.
I would always I put those two and the Seven Basic Plots by Christopher Booker are kind of top of the mountain for me. And this is something like a general thing for writers that I stress is you have to think about storytelling and writing as different disciplines. And I think that people get tripped up a lot because they don't do that. And so they're sort of like trapped in like they're trying to figure out storytelling stuff while they're writing, but they don't realize the difference between the two. And that becomes it becomes really hard where you're like, am I in the forest or am I above the forest looking down at it?
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that entirely. Coming back to TV series, some guy by the name of Ron Howard I'm sure nobody's heard of, has involvement in a potential TV series for Godfall. The most obvious question that anybody would ask is, how did that come about? But I also want to know if you have any kind of insight as to where this project is and the possibilities of it actually becoming one.
I cannot stress enough how much luck is a factor in everything, right? People kind of ask me like, oh, what's the secret to the success that I've had? And it's just like refusing to quit when I probably should have for years and years
Right.
and years, right?
Yeah.
So fall of 2023, I had had two comic book publishers who were two of my major publishers either like fall apart business-wise or go bankrupt. And I had this novel coming out, but it was coming out from a small press. I'd made effectively no money at it. So I had taken a full-time job in advertising, working with a friend who had recruited me for a long time. And I just sort of, I was like, all right, I'll write on the side, but that'll be that. And then I have a manager in LA who is, essentially the same thing as an agent. He read the book, loved it. It was like, hey, I'm gonna sell this. Sure, right. Love the spirit. He sent it out to like all the biggest names, and all of a sudden offers started to come in. And it was just sort of like right thing at the right time. Hollywood really wanted grounded sci-fi with a procedural element, which is exactly what the book is.
I know. Well, yeah, right. That's good timing. That's good timing.
So we ended up, we had 12 offers for the book, which like the most offers that my manager had ever had for anything before was like four, which is a lot. Like four is a lot.
Yes.
So 12 is just insane. So all of a sudden, like I'm being written up in the Hollywood Reporter, and I'm skipping out of work meetings to have Zoom calls with Ron Howard and all these
Right.
other people.
I'm just curious. I'm just curious. I'm gonna interrupt. Was that a good excuse for your boss? I feel like that's probably up there at the top as like one of the better excuses.
I mean, there was a moment where they were like, what, like the Academy Award?
Yeah. I
But
mean, you
yeah,
could
the
at least
guy,
try to make a good excuse.
right, the guy that I was, that had recruited me there, he used to write in TV. So he like, when I'd start, he was like, wait, really? So he really understood. And then it was pretty immediate, like the owner of the company, came over to me and he was like, it was really nice having you here. I was like, it was very nice being here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so ultimately I chose to option it to Imagine and Ron. And part of it was just that he committed to directing it. So where we are right now is Ron is finishing up directing a movie in Europe. The plan is that they want to start filming it this fall, per the terms of the contract. They kind of need to start filming it this fall, so I think the clock is ticking. But it, the nice thing is it really put me just on the map in Hollywood. So I got another deal where I sold a project to a studio and got a pilot deal as part of it. So I just finished that pilot for a totally different show, and I have a lot of people reaching out to me asking me about working on stuff. So I'm just, kind of in a place of being very choosy about what it is that I do. And I also, Godfall will be a trilogy, so the second book is mostly done. I'll write the third book this year, and I don't know. I love novels because you write the end and it's done. Like it's not a script where then it goes into development.
Right.
It's or even like comics, you write a comic book script, it takes years for an artist to draw it. So there's just that like immediacy, and there's also like a novel is only as good as the words on the page. So you can really evaluate like how did I do?
Yeah. With the I'm intrigued to find out where this is going in book two and three. Now you've got my head spinning. The mystery aspect of this, what were your early influences in mystery? I know I grew up reading a lot of Agatha Christie, which I feel like has influenced a lot of when I'm writing anything that has a mystery. I sort of call back on that.
I mean, she's the gold standard.
It is true. It is true. I'm not stepping out of the box here or anything. This isn't, you know.
No, but I also think that I think that a lot of younger creators don't always study the fundamentals. And I look at Agatha Christie as it's like study Agatha Christie and then study all the things that she influenced rather than just like seeing the more recent things that she influenced.
Right.
So I kind of had a weird childhood in that I just wasn't like I was a kid of the 80s, but I wasn't plugged into 80s culture that much because of how just sort of remote we were. Like we didn't have cable or satellite. So my family was a movie theater family on my dad's side. But the movie theater closed, but my grandma had one of those gigantic, like yard-sized satellite dishes and would tape movies. And she would tape all the old movies that played at the movie theater and then give me, these cassettes. And it's like, okay, you watch this, watch this, watch this. So I grew up with a lot of like classic Hollywood noir. And then that same grandma, she was also the English teacher at the high school. She had retired, but she sort of, just like I was her student. So she was always handing me different books. So it really, yeah, it was Agatha Christie. I'm trying to think like some Chandler. I mean, just, it was like nothing crazy, but all of the classics. And then even like, I don't know, like I really liked Hardy Boys. And there's something just of that, like, I think very, very steady, very tightly plotted thing. And so yeah, like I really wanted Godfall to work as just like a page turner. There's other stuff there, but I want it to be that like really tightly plotted, and yeah, it's like a Dan Brown trick, but it's a trick because it works of like ending chapters on an exciting moment.
I have often said, don't knock Dan Brown because,
No.
his method of writing and the short chapters and the way he unfurls a story, that's why the Da Vinci Code sold so much. And
Yeah.
writers
His
can be
skill.
jealous about that because they aren't Dan Brown, but don't hate him for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like if something is really popular, it might not be your exact thing, but you can learn from it. And I'm not gonna apologize about the fact that I want to sell a lot of books because I, and it's not that I want a lot of money. Like, money's fine, whatever. But like, I want a lot of people to read my books.
Yes, it's walking around the visual with your hand out and like this is my baby who wants to hold
Right,
it,
right.
and
Yeah, let go of preciousness. Just like try to write stuff that people like to read, but you can, and I think I accomplished this, but it's like I think Godfall has that like, just fun like dude beach read vibe to it, but there's also more stuff if you want to get into the deeper stuff.
You had mentioned a while back the separation between story and writing, which I love that you say that. It's I've often said that you can be a fantastic writer, but if you're not a great storyteller, you're not going to get published. But you can be an okay writer and a great storyteller, and you can get your work out there. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to become a great writer. It just
Right.
means that the story is that important. And I want to like dig into that a little bit further, but I will end up talking for a very long time about story because I love story. So we're going to
Yeah.
shift back to just the writing element, and we're going to talk about a phrase that's commonly used, word economy, and that's just like basically being concise and using the fewest amount of words to tell the most amount of story. And I know the answer to this because you have a journalistic background, which thrives on word economy. You have to be able to have that. Is that something that you had to work to develop through your journalistic career, or is it something that took a while to sink in and other forms of writing helped foster that?
I think it's always been there. There's kind of a famous story in my family about, so I, again, like I grew up in the country. I had to do 4-H, which I don't know for all listeners if they know, but 4-H is basically this youth
I do.
organization of like doing farming, ranching type stuff. So I had to raise calves. So you get calves when they're very young, you raise them up. You take them to fair, you sell them, they eventually get slaughtered for meat. It's
Yes.
circle of life.
Right.
But we had to, for 4-H, we had to write a report at the end every year. My report, like, and I hated it in part, but my report, and my mom saved this and then like years later sent it to me. My report was like, my calf's name was whatever. I raised him and then I sold him. And that was it. That was all I wrote. And my mom
Right.
famously said, "Well, you'll never be a writer." But I think like in my head it was like, this is all the information that's necessary.
Facts.
So I think there's just a part of it where it's like, I don't actually love writing. I mean, I love storytelling and I love what I do, but like writing is work, so I want to be as efficient as, like, why would I write a whole bunch of stuff that I don't need when that's just extra work that I have to do?
Fair enough.
And then also, like, the more that I write, the longer the book is, which means the more that the book costs, which means the harder it is to produce it, that like gets into the economy of like maybe that costs me in the long run because I sell
Yeah.
fewer copies. So that I don't know, like maybe I'm just really practical about it, but I also, like nothing drives me crazier as a reader than reading stuff where I can just tell it's like, oh, you love the sound of your own voice.
I know a lot of those writers.
Yeah, and you know what? And there are some readers who love that, who are just like, yeah, just like show off your skill with the language. But that it ain't me. Like I, Faulkner is like my least favorite thing on earth.
And in the right hands, it's something that can be done well and can appeal to readers. And I'm with you. I am not that writer. No. And get me to the end of the story and let's move on to the next one.
Yeah, I really like, if I am trying to emulate anyone, it's like Graham Greene. He it's like it's not quite terse, but it's tight, but then it's like every paragraph, like he'll do these interesting structuring things within the paragraphs, and like he's always doing these like little turns and little moves that's like just enough to keep you on your toes, but it's always like so tightly done. Or even like I really love Italo Calvino, and Calvino writes really weird, or wrote really weird stuff, obviously, super experimental, but like his stuff is tight. It's just not like, it's never self-obsessed.
We're running out of time here, but I want to finish with one question about Llewellyn, because I mean, I grew up in a very rural setting as well, but not, 150 to 300 people, so I don't have that ability to relate to what that's like. But how did growing up in that environment, and I don't know how long you lived there, but how did growing up in that environment influence story for you. And I mean that both in the story itself, but also in the character movement within that story.
Yeah, so I lived in Llewellyn until I was 18. And
Until
I
you could escape.
right until I went to college. And I was I never even got on an airplane until I was 18. So a pretty sheltered life. And like the whole county doesn't have a street light in it, like
Wow.
a stoplight. So this is like as rural as it gets. In terms of who I am as a writer, it was extremely influential. Part of it was just being out in the country and having all this land and having all this space. Like, we just had to imagine. That's what we did. Like, every day, it's just sort of like go outside and like all of those acres are just like this canvas for our imaginations as children. It was me, my sisters. I had some like up and down the creek, some cousins. So that was just everything. And then I grew up in a family where it's just a family of storytellers. Like that's what we do is when we all get together, it's almost like if you weren't that way, you would be like, oh my God, you guys are so insufferable. Like can you do anything that's not, in narrative form? But that's yeah, it's like that's just the way that we were. And then when it comes into Godfall, I think with David particularly, I actually like I based him a lot on my dad, who was he was a dentist, so not alike in that way, but he was someone who like could have gone out and been anywhere in the world, but just really was dedicated to his town. He's like, my town needs a dentist. That's what I'm gonna do. And so I was just thinking about my dad's life, my dad's experience, his dedication to the town, like how he would react with, change sort of put upon him. And then one thing in terms of storytelling, like I wrote the first draft of the book and I realized that the way that I communicate when I talk is through story. That I can allow my characters to communicate the same way. And so that was a big revision. And I think there's a lot of that in the book now where characters talk to each other through narrative, that becomes an extra layer of that's brought into things.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I hate it, but we're out of time. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day and talking about Godfall. Godfall is available anywhere books are sold. And people can find out more about you at danjensen.com. Is there anything else that you want to add before we head out?
No, I yeah, always love to hear from people, more questions about the book, questions about writing. I have a newsletter where I give, writing storytelling advice, that's very semi-occasional. So people are welcome to jump on that. But yeah, just thrilled to be on and really appreciate all that you and the organization do.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you in. We're not done with you yet. You will be with us at the 11th Annual Broadleaf Writers Conference, September 19th and 20th of this year. So if you want to come see Van, come join us for a conference and learn and get to know some people. Van's been awesome. Looking forward to whatever you produce next and crossing my fingers for this TV series because I really want to see that happen.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. You have a great day.
All right. You as well, Zach.
All right. Thanks, man.